I wonder if you've had the distinct pleasure of having a breakdown in public recently. You know, the type of breakdown where it's definitely known to other people that something is going on with you. Like, it's not just the, like, that kind of sense of, like, oh, other people probably know I'm upset. No, like, the big feelings erupting. One of those? Never? Not recently. Maybe I'm glad for you of that. Well, one particular breakdown that I had that I would love to tell you about, because that's my job, is... I just finished college, and I had this weird kind of month and a half before I was moving down to the United States to start seminary. And no one was hiring me for about a month and a half, and so I figured I may as well make the best of it. And so I figured that I could go to the Unitarian Universalist General Assembly that was happening in Phoenix, Arizona. It's this gathering of like 5,000 or 6,000 Unitarian Universalists, and I'd never been in a room with more than 300 Unitarian Universalists, so it was going to be a big change. And after that, I was going to spend some time in the desert and then fly across the country to do a psychological evaluation, because that's what you need to do before you become a minister, is they make you do a psychological evaluation, which is, I think, a great idea. It wasn't just like, maybe I should get myself checked out. No, someone made me. Maybe I should. And then, because I didn't know much about the geography of the United States, I decided I was going to take a bus from Charlotte, North Carolina, to Boston. So that's a really long way to drive. It's about 24 hours. Curious experience for another sermon. But that was my plan. I was going to then look around, find a place in Boston to stay, and go back home, pack up my stuff, and move. So it was on the plane as it was taking off, and I looked out the window and I saw Ottawa, this place that was my home for 4 years, kind of fading into the distance, that I started to get the feelings. They started to kind of like well up. And I looked down at the tablet because I was actually watching Gilmore Girls at the time, which is a really emotional show. So it was kind of a combination. At first, I was like, oh, well, I'm probably just feeling this because I'm watching Gilmore Girls, and then I'm watching, you know, the city recede, and I'm seeing that we're crossing the border, and then I start to see some wetness falling on the tablet, and I look up to see, like, where the source of the wetness is coming from, like some sort of condensation somehow got into this very atmospherically controlled space, and then I realized that, no, in fact, I was crying, and it was the consciousness of my own tears that started to move me from just like silently crying into that really like ugly crying phase. You know, the part where you have so much snot built up already that it's like hard to breathe. You're like one of those dogs that's like been bred improperly and you can't even like breathe and you're just kind of snorting. It was at that moment, thank goodness, that I was starting to be aware of everyone else looking at this, like, 21-year-old man watching Gilmore Girls bawling. And as I kind of came down from that experience, I kind of said to myself, wow, you're, like, feeling really overwhelmed here. I mean, I had just broken up with my boyfriend. Like, it was kind of that preemptive breakup, you know, where you're like, well, we're not going to stay together when I move, so let's break up now. So we did that, and then I was starting a new school, I was moving, and so I just had this deep sense of kind of what I thought was sadness and loss. I mean, so much of my life was going to be changed. Kind of there was a future that I kind of had imagined that I was giving up. And so this feeling of dread started to emerge from within me. And I started to wonder, like, did I make the wrong choice? Like, is this feeling of dread, of sadness, of overwhelm telling me something about the choice that I was making? About the choice to go to seminary, to move, to break up with my partner of the time, to become a minister? Was that the wrong choice? I think for many of us, we experience emotions as if they happen to us, right? It's like they're kind of these sudden things that overcome us. They creep up from within, or they come from without of us. It's like when we are added to a specific situation, a specific part of our kind of emotional matrix is triggered. If you've seen the new or the new-ish Pixar movie Inside Out, they talk about these core emotions that we have of joy, anger, fear, disgust, and sadness. And so the equation is almost that when I am put in a situation that triggers one of these emotions or one of these feelings, I have this emotion. So me plus a situation that would cause something to happen creates this emotion. But emotions are incredibly confusing. It's incredibly difficult to discern what they actually are telling us and what actually we are feeling. When they've done studies where they've asked people to try to label their emotions and get to a degree of specificity, they find that people are incredibly inconsistent. Not only that, when they've attached electrodes to people's faces, when they've looked at people's brains as they're having specific emotional experiences, or at least they're self-reporting to have specific emotional experiences, they have been hard-pressed to find patterns. That you can be experiencing fear and not have the fear part of the brain lighting up. It's interesting. It's also interesting that when you give people an experience like listening to the same song, we can have completely different experiences. Now, we did this exercise yesterday at our leadership development day where I asked the question, how do you know when anxiety is present? And people said, well, I know anxiety is present in my body or in a group when people are shut off and numb. And another person said, I know anxiety is present when I'm outraged and overly emotional, right? Two completely opposite behaviors or experiences that relate to the same emotion. And this is true for so many different types of emotions. I hope you've had the experience of getting to know someone so intimately that you can like decode their physical body in a way that no one else can in terms of their emotions. You're like, well, everyone else looking at you would know that you're sad, but I actually know that you're scheming. Or my partner, he looks at me and he says, it looks like you're really anxious, but I know that you've just taken your ADHD meds. So my brain is going. One of the ways that we can help this experience of overwhelm from our emotions is being able to name them, to name the sensations that goes on in our bodies and name the feelings or these emotions that are occurring outside of just the sensation. But it's scary to name our emotions because in some ways when we name them, it seems to make them more real, right? Like if I name that I'm feeling ashamed or that I'm feeling dread, suddenly I have to admit to myself of something. I have to follow through on that next step of what is it that I am dreading. And yet that patron saint Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers, reminds us that it's the opposite that's true. Anything that's human is mentionable, and anything that is mentionable can be made more manageable. Naming how we are feeling and what we're experiencing is actually one of the most powerful tools we can to be able to manage our experiences. I was reading this week Harvard psychologist Lisa Feldman Barrett's book, How Emotions Are Made. She's a neuropsychologist and has spent the last 30 years trying to understand this process of emotional creation. And she says that the classic view of emotions, the ones that I was grown up with and maybe you were as well, is that some sort of stimulus triggers the circuit inside of us to cause a specific bodily response and a specific emotional experience. Something sad happens, it triggers the sad part of our brain, and our body reacts in a sad way. In this viewpoint, we can choose how we respond to the emotions that are triggered, but we can't actually influence that domino effect. The stimulus causes the circuit, which causes our emotional experience. Feldman Barrett has a very different view. Her view is that emotions aren't just reactions to the world, but emotions are constructed, actually, emotions construct the world. So that your brain has this kind of general sense of what's going on in your body. It has this felt sense of like, how's it feeling in my body today? But it doesn't have a very accurate sense of it. She said in an interview that if we were able to sense all of the movements, all of the processes that our brain is regulating consciously, we would never pay attention to anything else other than our bodies. There's that much information going on. There's that much that our brain is trying to coordinate between the releasing of muscles, the movement of digestive fluids, all of the different signals that are coming from our muscles and our various nervous systems. So we have a really dull sense of what's going on in our bodies. And she says that our conscious brain is only able to tell us if we are in one or a combination of four states. Are we experiencing pleasantness or unpleasantness? Arousal or calmness? That those are the four states that we're able to really perceive inside of our body. And her theory is that once our brain has perceived that state, our brain takes those sensations and it starts to develop a theory. Based on its previous experiences, based on its best guess of what's going on, based on like what TV show we're just watching, it creates the best guess of what emotional experience we're having. It creates a theory to postulate what's going on in this moment, and that is what an emotion is. An emotion is our brain's best guess, bringing all the data to bear of what's going on for us. She says this, emotions are not universal, but vary culture to culture. And this was fascinating to me, because I grew up kind of with this sense that we all had these same base emotions. And what her research is showing is that for each of the emotional categories that we have here in the United States, there's at least one culture around the world that doesn't have that base category of emotions within their cultural experience. Emotions are not universal, but vary culture to culture. They are not triggered. You create them, she says. They emerge as a combination of physical properties of your body, a flexible brain that wires itself to whatever environment it develops in, and your culture and upbringing, which provide that environment. Emotions are real, she says, but not in the objective sense that molecules or neurons are real. They are real in the same sense that money is real, that it is hardly an illusion, but a product of human agreement. Essentially, what she says is that an emotion is just a feeling in our body that has a story. The story could be as simple as having a name, that when you fell down and your body started to feel unpleasant, your parents came to you and they gave you a name for what you're feeling. You're feeling hurt. You're feeling upset. Or it could be more complex than just a name. She tells this story, which I love, about an experience she had in grad school. Back when I was a graduate student, a guy in my psychology program asked me out on a date. I didn't know him very well and was reluctant to go because, honestly, I wasn't particularly attracted to him. But I had been cooped up too long in the lab that day, so I agreed. If only we were all that honest about our experiences in life. As we sat together in a coffee shop, to my surprise, I felt my face flush several times as we spoke. My stomach fluttered, and I started having trouble concentrating. Okay, I realized I was wrong. I am clearly attracted to him. We parted an hour later after I agreed to go out with him again, and I headed home intrigued. I walked into my apartment, dropped my keys on the floor, threw up, and spent the next 7 days in bed with the flu. An influenza virus in my blood contributed to fever and flushing and made the brain made meaning for that sensations in the context of a ludge state, constructed a genuine feeling of attraction in the normal way that the brain constructs any other mental state. She says, if I had had the exact same bodily sensations when at home, in bed, with a thermometer, my brain might have constructed an instance of feeling sick using that same manufactured process. Emotions are just feelings with a story. So once I completed that very long bus ride to get to Boston, I got a call from one of my friends that said, hey, did you know our mutual friend is actually going to grad school in Boston and he has an apartment and is looking for a roommate? And I was like, no, but sign me up. So I had a day and a half where I didn't have to do anything in Boston. So I went to the school, I checked out the neighborhoods, I went by the house that we were gonna live in. And so the last night I decided that nothing to do, I didn't really know anyone, so I was going to go to a bar. And this is something that I had never done before. I'd never kind of by myself gone out to a drinking establishment. I'd usually gone with friends or with a partner, and so I was really nervous. So I got to the bar, I got a drink, I stood kind of awkwardly, kind of my back against a pole to feel protected. And I noticed a few minutes later there was a guy across the bar who kind of smiled and waved me over. So I went to introduce myself. Hi, my name is Sean. What's your name? And he said, hey, John, how's it going? Now, I wasn't quite sure if he got it right. And I decided to kind of let it go. I mean, the sh and the j, especially if I'm nervous or mumbling, they can kind of get confused. And I thought to myself, I'm probably not going to talk to him for a very long time. I'm probably never going to see him again, ever in my life. So why would it matter if he got my name wrong? But we kept talking. He was a really interesting guy. And a bunch of his friends arrived kind of 20 minutes later, and he graciously introduced them to me, saying, hey, guys, this is John. He's a Canadian moving here to go to grad school. So I had my confirmation that he got it wrong. And so once again, I had the choice. What do I do? Do I just roll with it? Do I interrupt? Do I say, actually, by the way, the last 20 minutes, you got it wrong, but here's the right thing. I decided just to roll with it. So I ended up spending about 3 hours talking and getting to know this group of guys each and every time, them calling me John. But I had this really curious, freeing feeling that there was like a power in having a different name. That for this moment, I could like shrug off this concept of Sean that I've been living with my whole life. And even in this small way, it seemed to like loosen me up. Like, it's not a big difference. Didn't do a lot of therapy. See, John was more direct in conversations than Sean ever was. John was a little bit more confident, a little less anxious, and much less concerned with pleasing other people than Sean ever was. So at the end of the night, we'd exchanged numbers. They had invited me over for dinner when I moved into town. As I told my kind of new friends that I had a confession, that my name actually wasn't John, that it was Sean, and that they got it wrong, and I figured that it wasn't worth correcting it. And they collectively decided this was the most Canadian thing they'd ever heard. Now, in that experience, I didn't change, but the concept of myself changed. Emotions are just a feeling with a story, and so when we shift the story, we can change our emotional experience. When a sensation arrives from within us, we get to be a detective. We get to ask ourselves, is this what I'm feeling? Is this what I'm feeling? And we actually can offer ourselves alternative stories. We can add different cards to our deck. We can think which of the cards of what might be true for me is the best one that I want to experience in this moment. And some people might think this is manipulation, but it's actually the same constructive process done consciously that your brain is doing all the time. We're not actually powerless over our emotions. We get to construct the world with them. And it's important because if we think we are powerless for our emotions, there are really dangerous implications. One such example is that we have a rash of media attention around these officer-involved shootings of unarmed black men in this country. And each time they try to prosecute one of these officers, what happens is the officer says, I was truly afraid for my life. Now, if we accept that, we say that the fear mechanism within this officer was triggered, and so his behaviors are reasonable. Or we can think about how the very concept of the dangerous black man, created and reinforced by our racist society, lives in the bodies of our police officers. And so the constructed emotion of fear that they experience in those moments is real and fictive at the same time. And so we can intervene to think about how do we undo those concepts which lead very directly to these emotional responses which lead to death. Why were they afraid? Because the evidence showed that they shouldn't have been. So how do we shift these stories? The first is we need to allow our body time to give us the right messages about what's going on. Sleeping well, eating well, reducing the stress in our life allows us to do that interception, to actually sense what's going on in our bodies well. The second is we can help interrupt the sensations that we experience in our bodies from automatically become feelings. Just because I'm feeling a tightness in my chest doesn't mean that I'm anxious. It could be just that I'm feeling a tightness in my chest. But we also can make up new words. We can increase the deck of cards that we've been handed about the emotions that we might be feeling. Because if we only experience the world in two concepts of maybe feeling awesome or feeling crappy, everything can only go in one of those two categories. And as Barrett writes, in contrast, if you could distinguish finer meanings within, let's say, awesome, happy, content, thrilled, relaxed, joyful, hopeful, inspired, prideful, adoring, grateful, blissful, and maybe 50 shades of crappy, angry, aggressive, alarmed, spiteful, grumpy, remorseful, uneasy, dread-ridden, resentful, afraid, envious, woeful, melancholy, your brain would have many more options for predicting and categorizing and perceiving emotion, providing you with the tools for a more flexible and functional responses, that you could predict and categorize your sensations more effectively and better tailor your actions to your environment. One of the things she suggests doing is learning about emotional concepts from other languages, to add those to your deck. And the one that I came across while I was researching this is the German Torschusspanik, which literally translates into gate shut panic. And it's that sense that life is passing you by, that there's a deadline approaching, that a train is a coming, and that you're fretful that time is running out. What an interesting word to add to our vocabulary. To explain our experience. We can also recategorize the experiences, our affective experiences. She shares in her book that her daughter's karate coach advises his nervous students before they take their black belt test, quote, make your butterflies fly in formation. What he's saying is, yes, you're feeling worked up right now, but don't perceive it as nervousness. Construct an instance of determination. An emotion is just a feeling with a story, and with practice, we can write a new story. As I look back at that experience of dread that I had on the plane, that deep sense of, am I doing the wrong thing? What I realize is that I wasn't feeling actually sadness. I was overwhelmed with relief and possibility. Because the future that I had with that partner or in that city wasn't a future that I actually wanted. And so moving away was actually a freeing experience. But the story I had been told about leaving to go to a new place, about what a breakup means, had constructed a reality of sadness and loss. If I would have trusted that feeling alone, I might have gone back on the best decision of my life, which is to pursue this work in ministry. And I'm so grateful that I was able to step back and look at my experience and find a new way. May we do that together. Amen. And blessed be.